This is Worldview on WBEZ. I'm Jerome McDonald. Dozens of universities in Europe, Australia, and Canada accept results from China's national assessment exam, the Gaokao. The University of New Hampshire became the first U.S. school to accept the Gaokao. The move by New Hampshire to make it easier for Chinese students to come to the U.S. comes at the same time the U.S. federal government is cracking down on Chinese student visas. With me is Natalie Young. She's a Ph.D. candidate in sociology at the University of Pennsylvania. She studies social stratification in China. Thanks for joining me, Natalie.
Happy to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Gaokao? I don't think most people in the U.S. know a lot about it, but it seems like the entrance exam of all entrance exams.
Yeah, it's pretty grueling. Essentially, the Gaokao is an exam that high school students in China will take at the end of their high school career. They take it in the summer after the 12th grade. And it's a 9-hour exam split over 2 days that involves a number of multiple choice questions, short answer questions, as well as an extended essay. And it essentially is then used to in the admissions process for universities in China. So students' scores on this exam will determine whether or not they can go to university in China, and it also will determine which universities they would be able to attend.
And
Is it
considered fair, like a fair assessment of students in China? Because it sounds like it's had a lot of criticism. It's got a lot of memorization to it. But does it seem like, and you're a specialist in social stratification in China, is this one of the things that seems fair to students and gets good students in good universities?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. It's definitely the subject of much debate, both within China and among sociologists. So the exam, when you think about it, generally the idea is fairly meritocratic. The idea essentially is everybody comes to the table and they all take this exam, and that exam score will determine where you can go to school. And so when you compare it to other admission systems and other societies, including in the United States, in many ways, it's kind of taking out some of the subtle social class cues that play into the admissions process. So in the United States, we generally submit not only our SAT score or ACT score, but you'll also submit teacher recommendations, a resume listing your various activities. There'll often be an interview component, and there will also be special preference given for legacies, for example, or student athletes. And all of those various components can be influenced by social class. Your teachers might write more glowing recommendations for you if you behave in the classroom in certain ways that middle-class parents will raise their children to behave. So in that regard, this kind of exam-only entrance system is fairly meritocratic. But of course, in reality, students aren't coming to this exam with equal opportunities for success on it, right? Students from less developed areas of China are going to generally be attending schools with fewer resources, less funding, and certain schools are going to be more successful at preparing students for the exam. This is actually a new line of research that I'm looking into. What kind of programs do schools have to make their students have a leg up, essentially, on this exam than others? There's also a lot that families can do to help their kids prepare for the exam outside of formal education. They can put them in tutoring centers, test prep programs, which is a growing market in China. And the other thing is there is an aspect of the exam that is in many ways very unfair, which is that students from the city in which the university to which they're applying, those students will get special preference when they're applying. Essentially, what happens is the score that they need to get into that university, for example, Beijing University, the score Beijing students need to get into Beijing University will be lower than the score that students outside of Beijing need to get into the university.
Very interesting. I'm talking with Natalie Young. She's a PhD candidate in sociology at the University of Pennsylvania. She studies social stratification in China, and we're talking about the Gaokao, the entrance exam that all Chinese students take. They're thinking about using it to admit students in this country at the University of New Hampshire. They are the first to do it in the U.S. Other places in Europe and Australia and Canada already do. And also with us is Wen Huang, a veteran of the Gaokao exam. He is a journalist and writer, author of The Little Red Guard, amongst other books. Thanks for joining us again, Wen. Nice to see you.
Thank you, Jerome.
What was your experience with the Gaokao?
I took the Gaokao way in the 1980s. That was the fifth year after China resumed the Gaokao system.
And it's an ancient system, technically.
Yes. And then during the Cultural Revolution, Mao abolished the Gaokao system and it literally abolished the university system. In 1977, they started resumed the Gaokao system again. Now, I took it in 1982. Like Natalie said, it was the most grueling process. And we spent about the last 2 years of our high school cramming for the exams. And we've done so many practice exams. Our teachers, their bonuses depended on that. The status of the elite high school that I attended depended on that. And my parents, they put so much pressure on me that each day in school, my teacher would be saying that you will have to do very well. Our school depends on you, the top students. My dad would say, this is the make and break exam. If you lose the exam, you'll have to be a garbage collector or something like that. So I was so nervous that 3 days before the exam, and I couldn't sleep. On the day of the exam, and when I went there, I realized the first one was over. I realized it was not as difficult as I had imagined. And in the afternoon, I collapsed and I passed out. And I took some meds and I took too much. I started to throw up, but I managed to finish that. And in the end, and I managed to came out in my category, the first place in the province and then the fifth in the humanities section. And it was like winning the Olympic. Everybody, my parents got so much honor out of it.
So you got ill in the middle of the exam and still did the best?
There was the one test, like geography. I remember that it was so hot. Every year, July 7th, 8th, and 9th, it was so hot. And then I didn't sleep for 3 days. And I just couldn't stand it. And later on, my teacher made up a story, exaggerated my condition to encourage other students to emulate me. They said, he passed out. The doctors put him on the stretcher and took him to the ambulance. And then he woke up. He said, I want to go back to the exam. And he succeeded in getting number one. You know, they exaggerated so much, made me like a hero, which is not a true story. But I did pass out. I woke up and I threw up and I went back. And then I got over 90 in all the subjects, but I got 76 on that geography. But I still managed to get the top one. It was such a, I still have nightmares now. Like a month ago, I woke up that I went to the wrong classroom and I didn't know the answers.
Now, did this test prepare you for coming to Western schools in the U.S.? And I think you studied in England.
Right. The whole thing is the exam during that time, it was purely, it's like preparing for a game show. A lot of the memorization, for example, I can still memorize April 19th, 1775, the Battle of Lexington and Concord, or 1642, British Civil War, 1688, the British Glory Revolution. But nothing prepared you for, like, independent studies. I remember in 1984, I went to study in the UK, and then the tutorial, I was furiously taking notes because all I needed in China was to memorize the teacher's notes. And then after the class, the teacher said, you need to write an essay on Macbeth. I was so panicked. I couldn't do it. I got a B minus. That was my dad felt so ashamed of me because that was the lowest score I ever got. It took me a long time, you know, the whole study system. But I heard that the education system that my niece just took is reformed a lot. It changed a lot. So might be some merits in using that standard test, but certainly in my area it wasn't.
Natalie, let's swing back to you. Do you think this exam would accurately depict how, you know, well students would do in the U.S. if they were to come to the U.S. and the U.S. were to accept this exam more widely?
You know, this is an issue that education scholars have been talking about in regards to pretty much any kind of standardized exam. This is, you know, we have the same questions about the SAT and whether it's able to first of all, prepare students for, you know, university life, but also, is it a good measure of later academic success? And for some students, these kinds of exams can be pretty good measures, but for a lot of students, that won't necessarily be the case. And the thing with something like the Gaokao, you can technically take the Gaokao more than once, but for most students, you're going to basically have one shot.
Right.
So whether or not that's really representative of your potential is, of course, a tricky question. It is worth pointing out that that China generally performs quite well on international exams, such as the program for PISA, the program for international, I'm forgetting the exact wording of the acronym at the moment. But generally, China does perform quite well in math and science, and critical thinking skills among Chinese high school students are generally quite higher than sometimes, I think, we get the impression that, you know, the system in China is just rote memorization and nothing else happening. So I do think the Gaokao can measure things better than sometimes we give it credit for. But I think with any standardized exam, you always get these questions about, you know, is this really measuring students' potential?
Now, it seems like one of the things that ruffles people's feathers about accepting the Gaokao exam in the U.S. is the political aspect. And I understand there's essays about Xi Jinping now in it. Do you have to write a kind of political thing at some point now?
There's one subject. It's called political education. And then you have to memorize all the tenets of Marxism and stuff. And then in the Chinese literature part, there's an essay. It tend to be more political. For example, this year, most of the provinces, they have different tests for each different province, but they're all based on the Xi Jinping thought, and then some questions regarding patriotism. Or like my area was the patriotism, and now there's the different Xi Jinping thoughts, and all more political. And a lot of people, scholars, they're opposed to that. But it is. But like Natalie said, that it can be just like any standard test, you have the pros and cons. Now, I talked to somebody who was in charge of the Gaokao last night, and he told me that since my time, the system has changed so much, and the questions, even though they're the most challenging part, they're more and more tailored towards some independent analysis and thinking. But it's like a standard test. That's the only thing that measures your success.
Natalie, should it rub people the wrong way that you've kind of got to do a political trot in this thing?
Yeah, so this is, on the one hand, there have been some very recent developments in the patriotic elements to the Gaokao. There have been a lot of people commenting on the fact that these recent essay questions where you need to talk about Xi Jinping thought are kind of harkening back to an era of the Maoist era, when a lot of the Gaokao, before it was abolished during the Cultural Revolution, a lot of the Gaokao did have more patriotic elements to it. That being said, this is also part of kind of a longer, still fairly recent, but something that's been present in education in China for a longer period of time, which is there is a commitment among those who are designing curriculum to be including patriotic education. And I mean, that is essentially something that every country does from the beginning of public education. Schools have been trying to cultivate students and to a sense of being a member of their own country and having a strong sense of citizenship and loyalty to the nation state. But this has taken a little bit more of a, I wouldn't say dramatic twist in China, but I would say that there's been more effort on the part of the party state in the past couple of decades to cultivate patriotism in the student body. And that's kind of linked to the recent changes that have been going on in China as Deng Xiaoping introduced economic reforms in 1978. And we've seen China becoming more marketized. There's been a little bit less of a commitment of the general public to, you know, these more socialist principles and Mao Zedong thought than was the case previously. And so with this kind of widespread disillusionment with Marxist principles, the Chinese Party State is kind of needed to create a new sense of legitimacy for itself and also to maintain this kind of sense of nationalism, which is kind of important to maintaining China as it is today politically. So there has been an effort to educate students in patriotic education more so than, in the early 1980s, for example.
I'm Jerome McDonnell, and you're listening to Worldview on WBEZ, and I'm speaking with Natalie Young. She studies social stratification in China at the University of Pennsylvania, and writer Wen Huang, and we're talking about the Gaokao exam, China's entrance exam, and it's being accepted now in the U.S. by the University of New Hampshire, and probably other places in Europe, Australia, and Canada already accept it. I wanted to ask a couple questions about, it's ironic that the University of New Hampshire is trying to open up access to a new pool of Chinese students here by accepting the Gaokao. And at the same time, the U.S. has started restricting visas for Chinese students and making it, in some cases, kind of random, it sounds like, in their acceptance standards based on the kind of thing they want to study now. The FBI director came out and said that Chinese university students are a threat to national security, and the graduate students can only apply for one-year visas now. Wen, what do you think is going on here? Did Chinese students get caught up in our trade war?
I think so. I think we need to make it clear that the visa restrictions that the Trump administration has just introduced that apply only to grad students who are studying science like robotics, aviation, engineering, mathematics. And these are the areas that students face restrictions, like one-year visa. But undergraduate students, which the majority of them are, and they are not affected by this visa change. And I think this is we have to see it from both sides. And recently, there has been a lot of incidents where some Chinese scholars or researchers here, they are caught stealing secrets, trade secrets, like they just arrest somebody who worked for GE. He stole some technology-related, like turbine-related technology. And in Illinois, somebody went to steal some seeds from these researchers and scholars. So this happens. But right now, with the heightened sense of the trade war and stuff like that, and this issue is becoming more prominent. But when I talked with some students, they said that they have not been affected so far, but it is making it difficult for them. But after all, a lot of students, they come to the U.S. because we have the best universities here. But on the other hand, it's making it harder for them. But also, I think when we look at the issue, we need to take into account the fact that Chinese students there, because they're tech geniuses, they have made tremendous contributions to this country, the whole high-tech area, biomedicine, and a lot of the medicine. And if we stop doing that, if we are becoming more restrictive, it will have some impact on it. Historically, there's that story about Chen Xuesen. Natalie probably know about that. In 1955, he graduated from MIT and worked for Caltech. And in 1955, the Red Scare, and then he was detained, and then the U.S. later swapped him, and then he went back to China. He contributed to China's space and missile programs. He was instrumental in China's development of the atomic bomb. So it is that there are a lot of very great talents here. If we keep doing this Red Scare or exaggerate these terror-related things about China's spying activities, we are going to lose some talents.
Natalie, are you optimistic about what is happening with Chinese students with this track by the University of New Hampshire? They're trying to get into this pool of students and get them not to have to take the U.S. entrance exams, which is another layer of pain for them. At the same time, we've got all this politics. What do you think's happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think this new policy does make sense in that, you know, students are preparing for the Gaokao for pretty much all of high school. And then to ask them to then take the SAT, it just kind of seems redundant in some ways. It also means that students have to essentially do an extra year of preparation to come to U.S. universities. And Mona is absolutely right. There is a lot that Chinese students have to contribute to the United States.
Natalie Young is a PhD candidate in sociology at the University of Pennsylvania. She studies social stratification. And Wen Huang is a journalist and author of The Little Red Guard and A Death in the Lucky Holiday Hotel. Thank you both for joining us and talking about the Gaokao exam and a little bit about the visa requirements in the U.S. Nice to see you both.
My pleasure here.
Yes, thank you very much for having us.
Coming up after the break, we'll find out about a new tool to bring the stories of marginalized people to life in the university classroom. I'm Jerome McDonnell. You're listening to Worldview on WBEZ.